Well, we're going to look at something, and probably the title itself may seem to be just a little bit different. We're looking at the good news about temptation. I realize, well, we wouldn't think that there really was, but actually there is. And I'm basing all this on the passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. So we'll take a look at that at this time. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. There are many great passages in the New Testament that are of tremendous benefit. And this is one of them. I think this really helps us in our daily lives as Christians. Now, in chapter 10 here and verse 12, we almost have to consider verses 1 through 14. But chapter 12 especially, because in verse 12 especially, because here Paul mentions that one standing before God is not permanently secure, as some would have us to believe. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. So it seems like after establishing that point, when you go talk about temptation, well, it would be kind of a natural thing. And that's kind of a sobering thought, that something may happen that can actually jeopardize salvation. So what's been done about this? What can be done to prevent this? And I think those are questions that need answering. Those are questions that, first of all, will be asked, and they need answering. And I think that 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, provides the answer for us as to what would happen. So let's take a look at some of the things and notice these. And again, I want to point out that there's good news now in some of the points that we're going to be looking at. The very first point is that there's good news in this, is that temptation overtakes one. Now we might think, exactly how does that work? How is that good news? Well, keep that in mind as we go along here. Now first of all, there's the word temptation. And temptation is used in the Scriptures in two different senses. It can mean a trial, but it can also mean more of a test of someone. I think the idea of trial is over here in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested or when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son. So this was a trial, if you will. And I think also then there's James that's used as a test or a trial whenever there are certain temptations that are going to come along. James chapter 1 and verse 2, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. One place it's tests, another place it's trials. But that's really what it's talking about here. It's talking about those things that come along as temptations. Now that's one of the senses it's used in, as a trial or a test. Now the other sense is it's temptation leading to sin. And that's what you come up with when you continue to read there in James chapter 1, verses 12 and following. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. Now, tempt anyone to sin. Now, there might be trials and tests, but not something that would lead to sin. That's not the point. But then he goes on to say, each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. And then when desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Then having said all this, it says in verse 16, do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Many people are deceived into thinking about temptation and just a number of things. So I think what you do is when you see this subject of temptation come up, you almost have to determine whether it's a test or a trial or whether it's temptation to sin. And I think the context here in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 explains that for us. It's temptation to sin. And verse 12 makes it clear, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Fall into sin. So that's what it would be talking about there. It's towards sin. Another word that you find in 1 Corinthians 10 verse 13 is no temptation has overtaken you. Now, overtaken you is a word that primarily means being caught off guard. McGarvey says it's, or Barnes says, it's seized upon you or assailed you. As when an enemy grasps us and intends to hold us fast, that kind of thing. Now, where's the good? Now, we understand all this. Now, where's the good news in all of this? Well, the good news in all this is how it works. You're tempted, and you're tempted to sin, and some may be overtaken. You're caught off guard. And it is something that happens. Maybe you've done everything possible to avoid this and prevent it, and bang, there it is. And so, while we understand that this is what it's talking about here, but the point is, it doesn't have to be that way. And you can avoid it. And things have been done to help you to be successful when the temptation comes. And if you are overtaken, and if you're seized upon, and they're trying to hold you, that doesn't have to be a permanent thing. That's something that can be overcome. And so there's where the good news is about temptation in that regard. Now, another thing I see here in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, is that it says that these are things that are common to man. Doesn't it say that? The temptation to accept such as is common to man. Think about that for just a moment. Common to man comes from actually one word in the original language. And that word means that it's bearable. It's common to man. It's something that can be, that you could bear. And what would be the point of this? Well, McGarvey says the temptations which befell the Corinthians were such as men had resisted and could resist. In other words, they're common to man. And that's the whole idea here. And when you go back up through the chapter, you see that that's the whole point. Yeah, it's things about history of the people of God. Why it's talking about such things as being about Sinai and then sins in the wilderness and being tempted and crossing the Red Sea and being under the cloud and everything that's in all these things in there. And what's going on? Well, they were tempted a lot back then. And look at everything. And he's going down through there. And not only that, but there was idolatry involved in verse 7. And he's saying, these things have been done. They've happened. And you know what? People handled them and they got past it. I think the point here is that nobody's supposed to come along and say, well, you just don't understand. What I endure is greater than anybody else ever before or after. They're not overwhelming. They're not impossible. And also that they've likely occurred before to others. What does it say in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15? That Jesus was tempted in all points like as we are. And yet without sin. Think about that just a little bit. And he is our example, And so the temptations came his way. And what? Well, he was successful in meeting them. but they were common. I imagine that there were other people who had been hungry. I guess there were probably other people who had opportunities for power and other things, and among the standards of men and things like that. And yet Jesus refused all those things. And there had been lots of people who had been tempted, you know, to do the opposite of what God said to do. That's what the devil was doing, you know. Comes along and he plants doubt. If you're the Son of God, you do what I say. And Jesus wasn't going to do that. I'm not doing what you say. I'm doing what God says. That is, was he the first one that ever was confronted with something like that? No. No. You know, it's interesting. Sometimes you'll run into someone, and it's a person that's a member of the church, and they've got themselves in a fix. You know, they're in a mess. And I don't know, some of it they've just gone in there with their eyes wide shut. And they get into this, and then when you try to point out to them, you know, this has got to stop. You got to get away from this. You got to make a change. You got to make a break. That's what repentance is. You got to get back to following after God, doing what God says, and give up all this. And they'll just sit there and tell you, well, you just don't understand. Well, what don't we understand? Do we not understand that what you're doing here is wrong, it's sinful? Well, you just don't understand. I have to do this, or something like that. It follows up, you know, and there's, it's not really any kind of a detailed answer. It's just kind of a lame answer. You just don't understand. And I really think in the back of the mind sometimes, the folks that are using that, giving you that kind of a response, really think that you just don't understand. No one has ever endured what I'm enduring right now. I'm thinking to myself, really? Really? And you know, and there are times when we may possibly think that kind of thing. Whenever, you know, something comes along and happens, you know, whatever it might be. You lose a child, a parent, or, you know, someone that's close to you falls away. Number of things happen. You lose your job. And I think sometimes we think that, well, you know, people just don't understand. Just don't understand this. It's something that's common to man. It's very likely this has happened before. And, you know, don't think that God has just gone out here and just picked you and said, now today we dump everything on old Bill over here. That's not how it happens. But I think we put ourselves in that kind of a position, and then somehow or another we feel better about it. But that's not where the good news is at. The good news is that these things are common to man, and since they're common to man, we've got thousands of years of examples of how these things came about and how they were met and how they were overcome. And everything that God did and said and provided so that we can be successful. Which leads us to our next point. It says that God provides the way of escape. God provides the way of escape. You think about how important that is. I want to go to one passage. Now I'll mention the other. But you go to 2 Peter with me. Chapter 2 and verse 9. Now, this is in the context about Lot. You back up to verse 7 and you see that's who it is. And it talks about him, and it talks about whenever he gets over at Sodom and Gomorrah, and he's called righteous Lot, verse 7, and he was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. I would say that's probably an understatement. That righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. And keep in mind that what he was enduring there was just terrible. But he's enduring it because of a choice he made. Here's Abraham, here's Lot, and the deal was to Lot, pick out where you want to go, where you want to live, where you want to dwell. I'll go over there. Was it a wise choice? Well, no. And even from you know, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. But you see how all this has come about. But then it says in verse 9 that the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. The Lord knows how to deliver. He'll make a way of escape. And He provided one for Lot. What was it? It's not complicated. In chapter 19 of Genesis, in verse 17, he was told to get out of that city. There's your way of escape. Get out and get out now. And wanted everybody to get out of there so fast and so quick and so steadfast. Don't even look behind you as you're going. Now, we all know that one of the things that will slow somebody down is when they're turning around looking all the time at something and what kind of danger that puts you in. Especially if you'd be driving a car or something, you know. But, get out of there. There's the way of escape right there. And even whenever Jesus was warning about the upcoming destruction of Jerusalem, what did he say? Well, there are people here in the city, Christians, whenever you see these things, get out of there. He's giving them a way of escape. That's what God has done. So it's simple matter, you follow the instructions that have been given. And when you follow the instruction, man achieves the escape by following the instructions. That's how it works. It's a simple matter. In chapter 1, or in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, in verses 1 through 11. Now, I mentioned this just a moment ago. The main problem here is idolatry. And the way of escape, after going through everything that's said, and you get down there in verse 14, therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. What's the answer? Some complicated thing, a 12-step program, or whatever it is, it's just going to take months to overcome. No, get away from it. Flee. Run away. Get out of there, get away from this as fast and as quick and as complete as you possibly can. So what is it? Well, then we need to look for a way of escape. And I think it's there. I think it's here in the Scriptures. It'll tell you this. And I think we find it in life. You know, a few years ago, let me just reminisce a minute. I see on a regular basis, we've got this opioid crisis, and I think, if I don't miss it on the news, they want us to think that Northeast Ohio is worse than any place else in the country. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? This problem's all over the country. It's everywhere. But since we live here, our news broadcasters are trying to convince us. It is a serious issue, don't get me wrong. But interestingly, when we were in Arkansas, I watched the news there one night, and I don't know who was doing the news broadcast. I don't know, I had local news, I don't know. But they were talking about the opioid crisis in Memphis, and I thought, it's the same script, and they've just gone down to there, and they've just marked out, Northeast Ohio and put Memphis in. It's all over the place. It's all over the place. But then I think to myself, I remember back in the 80s, and the same thing was going on. And we had a First Lady of the United States. I don't think she was very well liked or anything like that, whatever the case might be. But she was trying to spearhead a program to handle the drug problem in the country. And it was just say no. That's not the answer to everything. But I'll tell you what, it is an answer. And it's a pretty good starting point. You just say no, and then all these other things don't follow along, like tipping over the first domino. Just say no. Sometimes, is that the way of escape? Just say no. You're someplace at work or the store, wherever you find yourself, you're on a little trip and you're eating in a restaurant and you're alone. whatever the case might be, and someone comes up there and it's pretty obvious, you know, they're flirting with you. Just say no. There's lots of things like this. Just say no. I had a political office one time. It was appointed. Then when re-election came up, I was smart enough not to run for the term. I didn't much enjoy it anyway. I had my fill. But at the end of the year, they had a dinner for us. And we go over to this restaurant. And everybody was supposed to be sitting in certain places. They had everything out. And they had your placement cards that tell you where to stay right there. I'm surprised I didn't have to wear a tag, you know, with my name on it. So at least I know who I was. Anyway. And every one of those placements out there had this nice tall glass of wine in front of them. I've been a teetotaler for 43 years. I've never touched a drop from the time I quit. And before that, I'm sure I qualified as being a problem. And I saw that, where my name was at, and I said, I'm not sitting there. And I told him what it was. I said, take it away. I said, I don't care what you do with it. I don't want it. Take it away. Well, but everybody's got one. I don't care if everybody's got 10 of them. Take that one away. Well, but that's where you're supposed to sit. How about if I just sit at home? I'm going to be there anyway. Just say no. Just say no. Why don't we just try that? Rather than say, well, that's just Pollyannish or oversimplify. I had a lady in Arkansas. She was visiting with her sister. She said, well, just say no. You know, one of those things. That's just, oh, really? Really? You think that just won't work at all? Name the sin. That won't work. How'd that work with Joseph and Potiphar's wife? How'd that just say no work for him? Look at it. That's why we've got all these things. To learn and to come to conclusions and see things like this. The way of escape is there. And when we've found it, we need to follow it. Jesus told His disciples, watch and pray lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. But the way of escape is there. Watch and pray. I think that's part of the way of escape, you see. And He also taught the disciples to pray. And when He taught them to pray, He said, you pray like this, do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. And so we see that God's going to provide a way of escape. We should look for it. And we should follow it. Also, our last point is at the end of it, making the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Now, I didn't put that up there. Anyway, man is not powerless in handling temptation. As a matter of fact, James says in James chapter 4 and verse 7, resist the devil and he will flee from you. That's not being said for God to resist the devil for us. That says you resist the devil. You do it. You. And so what do we find here? You may be able to bear it. There's nobody else going to bear it for you. You are able to bear it, but you've got to resist the devil. There were those that were successful, and we know this because the passage that we looked at earlier in James chapter 1, in verse 12, it says, blessed is the man who endures temptation. I think the idea is endures temptation as in has been successful. When temptation has come along and resisted these things. And I think also that the Apostle Paul writes about this in James chapter, in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 11. where it says, "Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." And following after that is everything that God has given us to be able to resist the devil. There's the armor of God that you see here. And the girding of the waist with truth in verse 14, the breastplate of righteousness and the feet that are shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit, the Word of God, and then add to that praying with all prayer and supplication and being watchful, like Jesus had said earlier. All these things have been provided for us. Take the gospel armor. Use it. It'll help you out. And we need something like this. You know why we need it? Because Satan fights dirty. That's how it is. Did you ever notice in the temptations of Jesus, when did he wait? When did he decide to come along with these temptations? When he thought Jesus was at a weak point, right? 40 days. 40 days. Fasting. 40 days. Think about it. Now's a good time. I'll get after him now. I won't go after him in his strength. I'll go after him in his weakness. Roaring lion seeking him whom he may devour. Whenever that lion goes to attack a herd over there in Africa, runs right straight for the leader, the biggest, strongest bull out there in that herd, right? No. No. He scouts it out, picks out the weakest ones, and then he takes off after one of those. That's what he does. He fights dirty. And us? All these weapons that are mentioned here, like the shield and the breastplate and all that, you know what they do? They all guard the front of the body. What do they got for the back? You see anything in there for the back? No. These soldiers, Roman soldiers, didn't have anything to protect the back. If you turned around, you were vulnerable. So now, but we've got everything that we can resist the devil, a frontal assault, you know, we'll be successful. God's provided all that. But when we turn around, turn our back, that's when the devil come after us. He'll wait till we're going back to the campfire where we think everything is safe. And bang, there he is. And that's when the temptations will come. When you're vulnerable, when you're weak, and what do you do then? And it's going to be harder then to make a go of resisting. We cannot do it all on our own. There's a limit to our power, but there's not a limit to God's power. I've said in Bible study on Wednesday night several times, when you consider God and meeting things and other, God's undefeated. He's never lost yet. So when it comes to the subject of temptation, who should we go to for advice? I'm not going to go to Dr. Phil and ask him about my temptations, or Oprah, or anybody else. I think I'll go to God. There's a good evidence that the power of God is present. He limits the temptations to what we are able to bear. McGarvey said again in his commentary that God permits temptation for our strengthening, not for our destruction. So God allows temptation, and we're stronger when we've overcome the temptation. But you're approved of God, and then you receive the crown of life, like it says in James chapter 1 and verse 12. And that's available for those who will obey the gospel and become children of God by believing in Jesus Christ, repenting of sins, and being baptized. And then sometimes, there's things that get in the way. There's obstacles to meet, but we meet those obstacles. We're successful again when they come our way. And as a result of that, we can receive the crown of life. Can we help you tonight, whatever capacity there is, that you might be standing well against temptation? If you're subject, why don't you come while together we stand and sing.